Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Hi, everyone. And welcome, Zareen, as well, to the Grow Your Business podcast. How are you going, Zareen?
Oh, thank you, Saul. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it is. It's wonderful. For everyone listening, it's always kind of fun. I think I always find it super interesting too, but for people to know where we're talking from, because I'm in Brisbane, Australia. And whereabouts are you?
I'm in the middle of England in the United Kingdom. So I'm in a place called Derby.
Rightio.
Think of Pride and Prejudice. And the countryside.
Yes.
Mr. Darcy.
I was actually, ironically, that's really funny you should say that, because we're actually re-watching that recently. The one with, I can't remember the actors' names, but the ones that we liked the most, particular version of it, which I think was the most recent one. It was quite good. It was actually just recently we're watching that. With I can't remember the actor's name.
The most recent one, the one with Keira Knightley. No.
Oh, no, no. It's not the most recent. It'll be the one before that.
Yes. The original series. The series.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. With what's his name?
I can't remember the actor's name, but they've got a marvelous range of, like, all the characters in it are absolutely fantastic. They're really, really good.
I love that
Mrs. Bennett.
Well.
Mrs. Bennett. Yeah. She's like, Mr. Bennett. That's hilarious. Yeah, it's fantastic. But enough of Pride and Prejudice. We do digress. But thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's going to be really super interesting conversation, I think. But before we sort of move into the main part of the conversation, for everyone listening who isn't aware, who hasn't heard about you, who hasn't heard of the Gift or Gift Wellness, could you give everyone just a little bit of an overview and a sort of a short history about who you are, what you've been up to, and then we'll get into it.
Okay, the short version.
Yeah, the short version, yeah.
So I'm Zareen Ruhi Ahmed. I'm the founder and CEO of Gift Wellness and the chair of the Gift Wellness Foundation and also the chair of the Halima Trust. So I run two charities and one business, which is a social enterprise. And the social enterprise is a kind of backbone of what I do, and it's my sort of day job, really, because from that social enterprise, it's a social enterprise because it's a business that does good. We manufacture and distribute and sell natural toiletries, which began with a range of menstrual products, sanitary pads that are not just natural, they go beyond just the hygiene aspect and the environmental aspect. For every pack we sell, we donate menstrual products to women in crisis, and we've donated over 6.5 million so far. So that's where the Gift Wellness Foundation, our periodpoverty.uk charity, comes in and runs that side of it. So it's charity and business hand in hand. And it's a real passion. It's a labor of love, that, you know, excites me and gets me out of bed every morning. Mm. And it's, you know, for me, it's a perfect business model. Mm. It's what me and my daughter always wanted to do together.
That's wonderful.
But unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be in the way that we'd planned. because my daughter passed away and 15 years ago. So this pact that I had with her to run a social enterprise and do charity work together with her is now me doing it with her as the voice in my head.
Mm. Yeah, is she, and so her memory then, like I was reading a little bit on your website too, and there was one part that really sort of grabbed me, which was it was a bit where, say, this isn't merely a memoir, this is for your book. It's a manifesto for anyone who believes in the transformative power of social entrepreneurship, the story of those who see potential in adversity and yearn to convert personal hardship into extraordinary societal value. That was sort of something that really sort of grabbed me, because like you were saying, it's you know, this sort of idea often, like as a small business owner myself too, like you get very kind of caught up in the business side of it, but like you're saying, like the, you know, it being a absolutely perfect mix of something like for good through sort of hardship, but then being able to blend it with, you know, this other sort of thing. I can't like imagine how I guess hard in the first like instance that like would have been for you, I guess, you know, but then how that through that sort of journey of when that first happened up to this kind of point, I guess it's easy in some respects, like into reflect on things when you have hindsight. But if you could just I guess for everyone, listening too, just run a little bit through like how, mm-hmm. how you then started that sort of process. Like, you know, you obviously had the plan in the first place, you're with your daughter, but then, to actually start it, how did that, sort of, happen for you, I guess?
Very good question. And hopefully it will answer the question that you just asked about how do you turn such a hardship into this, and how do you deal with it, and how do you manage your emotions and kind of turn it into something like this. People often ask me this question, and you know, and as well as, you know, how come you're always smiling, Zareen? How come you're so upbeat and positive? And, you know, how is it that you wake up every morning and you're, you know, content with life? How do you do that? So what happened was that, you know, like I said, me and Halima, we had a pact. Since she was a little girl, she was passionate about charity work. And whenever there was a disaster somewhere in the world, she'd be baking cakes and selling them at school and fundraising for the cause, you know. And she had certificates from the Red Cross and, you know, different charities. And she subscribed to UNICEF and all these sorts of things. And she it was the only thing she ever wanted to do. She used to laugh with me and say, Mum, you know, you're going to have to find me a rich husband, because doing what I want to do, I'll never make any money.
Right? That's so funny. So,
you know, and, you know, when other mothers and daughters were talking about the latest fashion or the latest music or EastEnders or, you know, the latest soap opera or whatever, we'd be talking about, you know, this sort of cottage industry project that we'd heard about or seen, or this, you know, about the Anita Roddick story and about activism and women's rights and, you know, all these sorts of things. And we were both quite creative as well. You know, I come from a creative background, and we just sort of, we were the same. So, and then basically what happened was that 6 weeks after, you know, she started her dream course to do of doing international relations and third world development at Nottingham University, she was being stalked by a mental health patient and she was abducted and murdered just a few streets from where we live. And as you can imagine, that was a leveler, you know, everything stopped. I was sort of at the, what I thought at the time was the kind of peak of my career. I was the CEO of a national organization and traveling around the world and, you know, doing a, you know, a very interesting job. I'd started my PhD and, you know, I was really thriving in that way. And obviously everything stopped. And I couldn't, employment contract was coming to a 2 year point where, you know, I would have renewed my contract for the following year, but, I knew I wouldn't be able to do that. So I went into sort of a crisis management mode, I guess, being a mum and with a family and my husband and my son and the grandparents and really kind of, I think women do that a lot. They sort of, they're so busy managing everyone else's emotions and feelings and they, you know, you go into kind of work mode almost. And there was a point where I think it was just the day after we discovered what had happened and it was confirmed that it was Halima who had been murdered. That night and the next day was a kind of a pivotal moment where I had to decide, you know, is this going to kill me or is it going to turn me into something that I'm meant to be instead? Is it going to be, you know, it was either one thing or the other. There was no in between. And you know, clearly, I think partly because of my faith, you know, that certainty that I had that it was a temporary separation, partly because I knew of that pact, that promise that I'd made Halima, that we would do this work together. I felt that this had happened for a reason, and that, you know, this was God's plan for our intentions to be realized in a much more impactful way. And I didn't know how that would be, what that would be at that stage, but I knew that that must be the reason. So for the next 3 years, I actually threw myself into the charity work, and I'd sort of put it out to tender to different charities to work with me to find a project that resonated with us and that I thought that Halima would like to get involved in. And the one that we chose, the project that we chose to partner with was to build a school in Pakistan. And my parents are from Pakistan. I was born here. And they're from Pakistan, a place called Sialkot. And it's near Sialkot, this place called Vazirabad, where there was a boys' school, but there was no girls' school. And so we committed to raise funds to, you know, hundreds of thousands of pounds to build this state-of-the-art school for 450 girls or so. And so for the next 3 years, I was fundraising and, you know, my husband, my son, the family, friends, everyone was involved. And I guess it was a survival strategy as well. You know, it was that or what else was there, you know?
Yeah, that's right. You have to have something to keep yourself moving I suppose, too, you have to do things too. That's and then, yeah, I mean, I think it's and so from that part where you've got the school, then how did that kind of transform?
With wellness. So it was April 2011, and I was on my way back to England after inaugurating the Halima School of Excellence. My daughter's name's Halima. And the school is called the Halima School of Excellence. We now have a college there as well, by the way. And we have over 1,000 girls studying there.
1,000, wow.
Yeah, and they're doing phenomenally well.
That's amazing.
And many have gone off to university and come back, and they're teaching in the school. And we have some in medicine and some in different fields, and they're doing phenomenally well. So it was April 2011. I was sitting in the airport lounge thinking, okay, you know, reach this milestone. And it felt good. And seeing those girls in that school, those orphan girls who now have a home and a place to be educated and fulfill their dreams. And it felt amazing. But that I had this fear in my gut of, you know, what do I do now? Like, yeah. I was at a loose end, and I was feeling anxious, and I picked up this magazine to kind of distract myself, I think, and it opened at this article, which was about women in refugee camps, in the Za'atari Syrian refugee camp, and it described how they were forced to tear strips off the bottom of their dresses. You know, the clothes that they'd fled the war with, and they were forced to tear strips off the bottom of their dresses to fold up into makeshift sanitary pads to use, because they had no menstrual products, and all the other horrific things they had to endure. But that, when I read that, I saw myself giving pads to these women. I don't know if I actually stood up, but it felt like I stood up, if you know what I mean. It was, you know, the power of that, the vision that I had at that moment. And I knew that that's what I was going to do. And that was the birth of Gift Wellness. It was such it hit me so hard, that image of me giving pads to these women. I knew that's what I was asking. I was asking God, like, what do I do now? Right. And I knew that I'd never work for anyone again. And I knew that whatever I did, it needed to keep me connected to Halima and continue to fulfill that promise. And when I read that and saw that image of me, that vision of me giving pads to those women in refugee camps, I knew that that's what the next thing was. And I'd never been in business before, by the way. I'd worked in the public sector.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. So I worked for across government departments. I was the CEO of a national charity. I'd worked for the NSPCC, the children's charity, before that. I'd done kind of graphic design and advertising when I was younger. And that's what I studied, but I'd never worked in the corporate sector and never done business, you know. So I didn't, but all I knew was I saw the end goal, and it was okay. And everything else to me was a technicality, you know. It was like, well, that's what where I have to get to. How I get to that, we'll sort that out, you know. We'll reverse engineer it. And so I came back to England and started my research and development into Gift Wellness.
It's really interesting, because you're almost coming at it from the complete opposite end to, like, a lot of people when they start from, in terms of, like, when you start a enterprise, like, you know, a business, not specifically a social enterprise, but like you start with, I provide this service, and then you work out the other stuff like afterwards, like just through sort of trial and error and through like your love for it, and you get better at it and all this sort of stuff. But the fact that you sort of, I find wonderful, but also just like incredibly sort of interesting that you came at the whole thing from the point of view of giving like as a gift, which like generally I'm sort of assuming that that's like, you know, hence the name, like that you had this sort of vision, this idea of helping these women out, like giving them a gift. And then everything else like came after that. I think that's sort of amazing, you know, but it shows to me like the power of, you know, one, just that, it's origin story as to why you were doing it, but just the idea of having a, just on a very simple sort of level, of having a very clear vision. I mean, not that you had, you know, it obviously came in a moment, you know, and you had this sort of inspiration, but I mean, I'm a big believer. I'm not sure exactly where or how or why, but like in, I don't know whether you call it fate or, you know, that things do happen for a reason. Yeah. You know, 'cause I actually think they do. Like I always find it very, I don't know. I just don't buy the whole random thing. You know, I know that happens too. You know, that's obviously a thing. Random things happen, but I don't know. If they do, it follows for me that if things happen for a reason, then everything else that comes after that must also be for a reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess that's what you're, you know, sort of then came to the conclusion, like through the whole thing, that it was for a reason and you saw, you know, a real purpose in it. And, mm-hmm. and that, and so, at that point, when you started that, at what point in the timeline did you then, I mean, decide to write the book, The Gift?
Oh, I mean, that was recent. So that was
right
9 years later. It was during COVID right. that I decided to write the book because so many people, there was just so much to tell. I had such and it was difficult to relay the story and the serendipity within the story, the alchemy, you know, this thing that you're talking yeah. about, which is, you know, to me that's what faith is, you know, that surety that you have when you see that vision and you just trust in it, you trust that there's a reason for it and you know that you will be, if your intention and your vision is for good, then the right people will come in front of you and you will come in front of the right people to make that happen. And when you believe it and you actually feel grateful for it before it's even happened, then the, call it what you like, the universe, God, you know, everything conspires to make that happen then. And I truly believe that. And so, you know, I mean, the way that it happened was when I came back and I started looking into the issue, you know, I'd never known about this subject really, even though I knew that, you know, there was poverty in the world and it may have crossed my mind, but I didn't really know much about the issue. And I certainly didn't think that it existed in Western countries. So when I came back and started looking into the issue of, you know, the lack and the lack of accessibility and affordability of menstrual products for women in crisis situations, I was horrified when I realized that it was also women on my doorstep here in England who were suffering from this thing that is now called period poverty. It didn't have a name at that point. And And then I realized, and then I thought, okay, so that's what I'll do. I'm going to sell products and give products, right? For everything I sell, a certain amount of it will go towards me giving products to these women. And then when I started looking into the products that I could potentially sell, the things that would be off the shelf, you know, with my own kind of, you know, the private label sort of model, they were 99% of them were highly toxic and made from very cheap inferior materials and petrochemicals and plastic and I realized why, you know, I always felt awful at my time of the month and people I knew as well, and what an effect it had on women's bodies. And I started looking into that and the toxicity of products. So basically, I ended up designing my own brand, you know, with my own ingredients in these products. And the real, there were other natural products out there that were starting in the marketplace at that time. But where mine really differs is that under the top layer of these pads, there is a layer that's made of minerals, a mineral called tourmaline, which is pulverized and made into a resin and rolled into a kind of fabric. And it naturally emits negative ions. It has a kind of an electrical charge that, you know, in this stone.
Yeah, I was reading about that, actually. It sounds amazing. Yeah, it's a semi-precious stone, right?
It is. That's used in jewelry and things like that. But it's used in other medical devices and other technology and mattresses and, you know, for people with bad circulation and other issues. And I found that I soon found that my main following was women with a condition called endometriosis, which you know, apparently one in eight women have, and it's excruciating, and the, you know, it causes very, very heavy menstrual flow and excruciatingly painful for these women, and all kinds of infertility issues and other issues as well. But the main one, the main followers, and this was without any publicity. I wasn't even, for me, even it was still kind of theory in my own experimentation and testing with, you know, a relatively small sample of women, like 50 women, that I realized, you know, that made me decide to put this element in the pads. But it really sets the products apart from other products. And there's nothing else like it on the market in the UK and most of Europe, as far as I know, in Europe either. But, you know, the other thing was the environmental aspect, and I wanted paper packaging. And when I first started, the bottom layer of the pads and the wrapper was still plastic. It was PE. You know, because the plastic alternatives that were just starting to come out, and they were still quite expensive, and it would have outpriced the product for the customer. So I had to wait a little while, and then in the second and the third container that came, you know, we added that element as the price came down of plastic alternatives. So now the products are plastic free. They, you know, the plastic alternative material we use is made from corn. It's corn starch, and the wrappers as well, paper packaging, the tourmaline layer, natural, you know, ingredients, highly absorbent. And it's a kind of a cherished brand. And, you know, I call it Gift because the brand is called Gift because it's a gift for the women that use it, and a gift for those that benefit from it, and a gift to the planet, because on average, about one third less product is required because of, you know, because they're more absorbent, because it balances your hormones out, the tourmaline does, and it actually makes life a lot easier for women that use these products. So and you know, they're plastic free, so it's a win-win all round.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds, when you say it, when you explain all of that, and I guess for the other half of the world, like the men in the world who don't have to deal with any of that, you know, it's kind of, yeah, and for like a lot of people, like people are just used to knowing like a certain norm that this is what happens with the products, and I'm sure like heaps of people don't really think about it, but I find it incredibly interesting that it's been then kind of, you know, through this journey, like through all this other, all the other things you spoke about, that you sort of came to this point, that it came through this kind of pathway, and then, you know, and then this sort of seemingly, you know, chance event of seeing this article, you know, that then led down this whole path. And you hear these kind of, I'm repeating stories like that. And that's, I guess, why I said before, it just doesn't really make sense that these, you know, things are just, that they always sort of seem meant to be, which I guess you could argue is easy in retrospect, but it has, before we came on the podcast and I was just having a look a little bit more about tourmaline, I found that remarkable. And also the fact that, you know, that all the, well, you know, assuming most of the other products on the market, like you were saying before, for such an important thing, you know, an important, you know, health thing, I mean, for women, is, you know, is so, I guess, you know, unhealthy. And I mean, I don't know enough about it to argue this point, but I mean, I would assume that, you know, perhaps I'll sort of get your thoughts on this too, that many of those health related sort of problems, you know, with cycles and things actually could come like from these other products that aren't so great. Well, I would assume that, because it's, you know, it's and that norm, which I guess has kind of been established, that it's normal to have such, you know, such sort of problems for heaps of women, that's the norm, but maybe it's not really the norm.
No, it's not. And it's slowly coming to light that it's not, and that we shouldn't have to suffer so much. And then it's not also the health issues. It's the other societal norms that we've become accustomed to, whether it's
like the lack of education around it.
Absolutely. You know, from when we're little girls, and then we go to school, within schools, where we're taught to kind of hide it and not talk about it, no matter how bad it gets. You know, I remember, you know, having to go to the nurse in school, and with severe abdominal pains, and when I was, you know, quite early in my, you know, menstrual days, and trying to get used to it, and her just throwing me some paracetamol and saying, oh, it's just your time of the month, you know, and really being fobbed off, and oh, we'll just get used to it, girl, you know, that sort of attitude. And then going to work and having to deal with all of those issues within work, and kind of pretending that you're the same as the men, you know, in terms of the way that your biology works doesn't affect your job. But sorry, but it does. You know, our bodies work differently, and we go through different phases. We go through these cycles, and it's time that, you know, people dealt with that and actually accommodated for it. So one of the things that, you know, that I go when you go through the book, you'll see the kind of the organic development of the strategy. So it started with you know, period poverty and menstrual, you know, and then healthy menstrual products. And then it was actually during COVID that everything changed. I had a chance to step back and think about, well, you know, it just felt like there was something missing, you know, where we were providing products to whoever needed them for free, you know, through the charity and also through the business and providing non-toxic products. So that was another box kind of ticked that I wanted to achieve. But then why was I feeling anxious and not as if we're doing everything that we should be doing? And it was because there were within that mosaic of a woman's life, you know, there were certain tiles that were missing in that mosaic, you know, to create the kind of life that women want to live in, you know, the kind of world that women want to live in and are comfortable living in and being authentic and not having to hide things and be something that they're not. Mm. So I came up with a whole kind of range of products to fill in those gaps. So for example, we came up with a period gift box, which is a product that parents buy for their daughters to prepare them for when they start menstruating or if they've just started menstruating, so that, you know, girls who start their periods when they're at school, it's a huge shock, especially if they start as young as 9 or even 8 now, you know.
Is that right?
Imagine how traumatic that, you know, for a little girl who doesn't know what's going on, you know. So you know, it's parents that need to prepare their daughters and make it feel like, you know, it's going to be, it's something natural. It's something to expect, you know, do it in a light way. And so this period gift box has a whole range of natural, lovely products and information for the girl herself and her family. And things like aromatherapy oil and chocolate and a heat pad that's natural, made with lavender and rice and things. And, you know, just lovely things. And the products, of course, for her, and an intimate wash bar and, you know, things like that. So that was one thing. So for little girls. And then the next thing was to do with women at work. Women in the workplace, two things where, you know, one is to provide free products, just like employers buy toilet roll. You know, they should be buying, they should be supplying free menstrual products in the washrooms. It shouldn't even be a question nowadays. So we now supply dispensers, free dispensing vending machines. So you can just take what you need. There's no coins or anything to levers or anything. You just take what you need out of the dispenser. On one side, you've got pads. The other side, you've got tampons. And you go into the toilet. It's on the wall. You just take what you need. You know, simple. And it's for staff and clients. So, you know.
Yeah, it makes sense, though, too. I mean, like, when you say it like that, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that sounds like that should be the norm.
The norm, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I mean, once again, like, that's not my world. But then when I'm introduced to it and you're explaining it in that way, and I'm like a lot of people, like, you don't know about somebody else's world. You don't really think about it. Like, it, you know, it sort of passes your mind. You obviously consider it, but you don't really put that much thought into it. But then you're, you know, explaining it in that way. And to me, I guess in some funny way, it's kind of then easier from a third party point of view for me than to come in and having not thought about it previously, you know, sort of weighing up the pros and the cons and all this sort of stuff. And you saying, I was like, yeah, well, yeah, that would sound like that should be the norm, because that's, you know, in that same sort of scheme of things of a normal part of culture And, you know, I guess like a recurrent sort of theme for some of the things you've been talking about is that idea of what's acceptable and not acceptable through culture and through different cultures. You know, mm-hmm. Certain things are completely taboo and over time they become less so. But I mean, it's still, whilst it is more normalized, I guess, like as a outside observer like me, you know, sort of you go, oh yeah, that's sort of more normalized, but still it's obviously not, you know, that normalized. It's still, you know, which is, yeah, I guess it's easy to go, it's normalized from a brand point of view, because like being a designer too, and you obviously come from that kind of creative thinking, looking at brands and how that industry is sort of advertised, I would go, yeah, it's sort of normalized. But from the product side of things and from like the thought and the energy of putting in to make a product that is really actually really healthy, and it's actually like, you know, for something that is actually like incredibly important, like for like a woman's health, you know, mm-hmm. with you talking about, I was like, wow, it's kind of, you know, it's like the equivalent. I'm not sure if this is the right analogy, but like, I mean, being fed sort of junk food all the time, you know, it's just the wrong, like it's just the wrong sort of thing, you know. I mean, I've got the advantage of sort of not knowing anything before now, you know, and going, wow, that makes like so little sense, like after you've explained it all. Mm-hmm. And the fact that like you, so with the tourmaline side of things, how did you actually come across that in the first like instance? Did somebody tell you about it, or were you just sort of researching?
This is another serendipitous event that led me to the tourmaline was when we were in Pakistan to inaugurate the school. My mum was with me, and she had high blood pressure, and she really loves sort of Chinese medicine and stuff. And we were a few days before the inauguration, we were in a place called Gujarhan, and it's in the north of Pakistan. And we had relatives around there that we were visiting. Mm. And we saw this Chinese herbalist, this Chinese medicine shop. And she said, oh, let's have a look in there. And we went in there, and, you know, this little Mr. Miyagi type person came out from the back of the shop. And, you know, it really kind of, it was like a proper Chinese sort of the smells and the sounds and the, you know, very evocative little shop set back from the road. And he checked my mum. He checked her pulse and things like that. And then he said, you know, your blood pressure is high and this is wrong with you and that's wrong with you. And you have a bit of arthritis. And I mean, he knew everything about it just from checking her pulse. And then he said, there's something that you should try. And he pulled out this, this sort of belt, this fabric belt that straps around, and it kind of, you strap it with, kind of close it with Velcro. Mm. And adjust it around your torso. And he said, this has a lining made from tourmaline it's negative ions, and it will help your circulation and your blood pressure and balance your hormones and all this sort of thing. I thought, gosh, that's strange. And then he looked at me, and then he said something in Mandarin to his assistant, and she came back with this pack of menstrual pads, and from the company that had patented this layer that I use.
Mm.
And he said, this is menstrual pads and you should try them, and these have the same tourmaline layer in the belt. Wow. That I'm showing you. So that's how I came across it. So I took the pads and
incredible.
And then when I got back to England, having seen that vision about menstrual pads and everything, I then remembered that I'd got that pack of pads with it, and I thought, oh, let me try those as well. I tried them, and I mean, they were a bit rough and ready, and it was in a plastic packaging thing, plastic kind of foil packaging. It wasn't very eco-friendly. It was a bit rudimentary in the actual makeup of the pad. It wasn't that comfortable. But the effect that it had on my cycle that month was incredible. Mm. And I just thought, is it a placebo effect, or do I really feel better this month? Right. And so I sent off for some more. And it was a Korean company. And I sent off for them. And then I gave some to my sisters and my friends and other people. I said, try these. Is it me, or do these really change? Are these a game changer, you know? And they all had the same effect. So that's when I decided to use the tourmaline. It coincided with when I was researching the products, and it all just came together. The dots just all joined.
I just think that's amazing. Like I think it's like such a, you know, at this point now you've got this great product. You've got this, like, you know, incredible sort of story about how it all came together. And then you have these seemingly chance kind of events, but like you, I almost can't sort of put it into words, because having different things, I guess, through my life too, that you often look at and you go, like, I'm now at this point, and when, like, you reverse engineer how you got here, through, and there's like some point or points where there's bits in the story, like you were just sort of saying, where there's these tiny little chance events that you could have easily have not gone to, like that store, the Chinese store. Would you have found it out some other way? Maybe not. So therefore, you know, it doesn't really even matter that, you know, that sort of perspective, and it ties back to what you're saying before about faith in things. No matter, I think, whether you're a religious minded person or you're not, like it's obviously a different perspective if you are, but like that idea of having faith and being, you said something like right at the start, which was being grateful, like for things. And I think that's
even before they've happened.
Yeah, I think that's really, it's sort of something that we've been speaking about in our own family recently, and I find it more and more is like a really important idea for me personally to be grateful for things. And I'm not sure if I've, like, you know, I haven't overly analyzed it or anything, but it just seems really important. You know, it seems like a really important thing to one, for other things to happen in the right way. And I think that's it's like an underlying sort of message for me. And I think, like, it's a wonderful sort of part of your story, you know, that you've shared with everyone. And
it's,
you've obviously,
a key part of the story.
Yeah.
It's the main thing. The reason why I call the book The Gift is not because of the brand, The Gift. It's not because, you know, people say, oh, is it because you know, your daughter was a gift? Is that why it's called The Gift then? No. Is it because your charity work, you know, you give gifts, right? No, that's not why I called the book The Gift. The reason, what I mean by The Gift is the actual hardship itself, believe it or not, is the gift. So, you know, and when I said that recently to, it was on another podcast where I was being interviewed, and he said, he says, yeah, but if someone said to you, well, you can have your daughter back tomorrow, you know, you're saying that you're grateful for the hardship. And you're, you know, you're content with the way that things have happened. But if someone said you could have your daughter back tomorrow, but in return, none of this happens, you know, the school, the 1,000 girls in the school, all the millions of pads that you've donated to women in crisis and all, none of that would happen. Would you take her back? And I said, no, I wouldn't, because like I said, it's a temporary separation. And this was the best plan to realize those dreams that we had and to realize the intention. And I think it's, you know, we are energy. We are, you know, I'm interested in the science of energy and the science of gratitude. Now I'm looking into it more and more. And what I find is that when you are, the more grateful you are, the more you attract.
I think that's very true. That's very true. Absolutely. I 100% agree. I think there was, I think that's, there's, I've almost come, and I say almost because I don't really know, but I've almost come to the conclusion that I don't really, that you don't, that, well, me, you know, that I don't necessarily need to know. I think there's too much focus on, you know, people, which I guess ties a little bit into what you were saying about, you know, this sort of hypothetical scenarios about if you could do this, would you do this? And it's like, well, one, that's not what happened. And two, you know, this, it was the energy and, you know, and the events and the good, you know, energy wise and actual wise that came out of it, you know, that's how they arrived. You know, it wasn't through, it wasn't, you know, could they have happened from some other way? Yeah, perhaps, but that's not what happened. You know, this is what happened. And this is like, you know, and I mean, there is like,
if Halima was here, right? If Halima was here now, we would have done something. We would have had fun. We would have done some projects together and things. But it wouldn't have been at this level. There wouldn't have been this much impact, this much passion, this much, you know, a sense of urgency, you know, to do so much so fast. And it wouldn't have been this big. It wouldn't have, because we would have just done, you know, what we could. As like normal people would, but it's well beyond normal now. It's much bigger and it's it's just got more energy in it because of what happened. And you know, it's a case of you know, when you that vision that I saw in the airport, when you have a vision that you engage with viscerally, emotionally, to that extent that it permeates through every cell in your body and it doesn't go away. It's there. It's always there. It's when your heart and your mind are both engaged that the magic happens. And then there's some shift in the quantum field or whatever it is, you know. But that then your trajectory changes and you're on a different path all of a sudden, and things align and the right sorts of, I mean, my book is full of those sort of serendipitous stories. And you think, really? Well, how, you know, for example, when Halima was 13, I went to Pakistan with my father because my aunt was sick, his sister was sick. And when I was there, I agreed with my cousin in Karachi to set up he had an empty property and we wanted to set up a school there. We got talking about, you know, the kids on the streets, the, you know, who were homeless and stuff. And we thought, right, I'll go back and we'll set up this charity together. I'll fundraise over there and we'll do this together with my cousin. So when I came back to England and I told Halima, and she said, She said, "Mum, you know, that's what I want to do when I grow up. So, you know, can you call it something to do with my name? You know, can we name it after me?" And I said, "Yeah, come on." So we went down to the local bank, the Lloyds Bank, and set up an account called the Halima Trust. That was when she was 13, you know, and, you know, like 6 years before she passed away. And then, for, you know, as it happened, that because of the politics over there and red tape, and it was difficult to set up that charity at that time. So it was left dormant and we forgot about the bank account. We had the bank account, forgot about it completely. And it wasn't until after she passed away. And I thought, you know, I need to do this. And then my son reminded me, or my husband reminded me, "Hang on a minute, haven't we got an account called the Halima Trust?" You know, so
yeah, you can only I think
coincidence, so
yeah, no, I mean, I also the idea that things like our, well, not all cultures, but, you know, I would say probably Western culture, for the most part, there's always this sort of idea that things have to be quantified and things have to have an answer for it. And you've got to have, you know, you've got to have like 1 + 1 has to equal 2, and it's got to do this and that. But I think there is some underlying really important truth that doesn't kind of need to be answered, but actually just is. And I, mm-hmm. you know, one, I'm probably just because it just from my own viewpoint, it just helps me just get by, because I often, like, I think a lot about these things, and it often gravitates to like, oh, you know, how or why. And I'm like, I don't know whether I need to anymore, because I just feel like I know certain things, and whether mm-hmm. or things like that happening that have some meaning. I'm not sure what the meaning is, but it feels good and it feels mm-hmm. right. And if it, and if it ends down a certain path, yeah. And some people will be like, yeah, but you don't know that. And science says this or that. I was like, fine, you know, it can say whatever it likes, you know, but mm-hmm. it doesn't, but, you know, but I think that's, you know, I think generally on that sort of point is probably like a nice way to sort of wrap things up. But like we were saying before, I was going to ask you, Zareen, could you please share with everybody a some sort of quote, or something that you'd like on a note that you like, who feels relevant?
Absolutely. I've actually just had some bookmarks printed, and I've put a quote on the bookmark. And in fact, to the beginning of every chapter of my book starts with a Rumi quote. So, but the quote I'm going to give you isn't in the book. It's on my bookmark. And the quote is, "Wear gratitude like a cloak, and it will feed every corner of your life." And that's by Rumi, the poet Rumi.
That's lovely.
"Wear gratitude like a cloak, and it will feed every corner of your life," because I really believe that.
I want to write that down. That's a great one. That's a really good one. Yeah, yeah. No, that it's, I'm, you know, with you the whole time.
And I'll give you one more that I've just randomly opened the book to, and it opened at chapter 2. And the quote at the beginning of chapter 2, which is called "Revolutionizing Women's Health," the quote is, "Where there is ruin, there is hope for a treasure." And that's a Rumi quote as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually very much like, there's a thing that my wife and I have always sort of, this sort of metaphor, which is, I think, sort of similar in sort of some ways that we've had throughout the years, which is always this idea that, whenever there's sort of some argument or something bad happens, it's like you know, a bushfire or like a forest fire, everything gets completely destroyed and it gets burnt and charred. But all the result of that is that all the sort of nitrogen and all this sort of ash and everything goes into the soil, and it makes it richer and more stronger for future growth, like as a result. And it would never be that way if all those things weren't destroyed, you know, in the first place. You know, that was how it was able to have more growth. I was like, the only way is for those things to be destroyed, you know. That's and it, then it's sad and tragic, seemingly. Everything's black and seemingly dead. But then, and I actually had a firsthand experience of that. Just recently too, we had a fire on a property that we have, and the property had to be burnt to save so the bushfire didn't actually come further. And it was like at the whole place, like except for our house, obviously, fortunately, was all black. The whole, but there was all this grass that was tall, dead grass that was burnt. And that, I think a couple of days later, I was walking on it and I saw all these little things everywhere, like all these tiny little bits of growth, like everywhere, all these little bits of, I think it was like clover or something. A week later, and then a week later, the whole thing was green. The whole thing with all this rain. I was like, that's incredible. Well, and it looked actually better and more beautiful than ever. And I was like, it was kind of like first instance, oh my gosh, that's awful. Next instance, a week later, that's like the best thing that happened. So, you know, what can you say? So, and just before we go, could you please tell everyone the best way for people to find out more about your book and all the products and everything? Where do they go online? We'll have links too for people to go to. But
so the book is called The Gift. It's available on Amazon. It's number one bestseller now on Amazon, which is
great. It really? Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
How exciting.
It's the customers, the customers love it. They're not just customers, they're like diehard fans of what we do. And they without them, we would have gone under in COVID because, we lost all the retailers. We were selling through retailers before COVID, and during COVID, all the retailers were closed, all the shops were shut. So we had to quickly pivot the business to an online business, and our customers found us. They were not going to let us go because they needed not just the products, which helped them, but they knew that, they were doing good by supporting us, and they were, they had more than just, they weren't just investing money. When they bought a product, it was a lot more than that. So, that there's a lot to be said for social enterprises. So, yeah, the book is called The Gift, One Woman's Journey from Tragedy to Building a Global Business for Good. And, and my name, Zareen Ruhi Ahmed. You can find out more about Gift Wellness at giftwellness.co.uk. Periodpoverty.uk is the charity, so please support us there. And we now have an app as well called Period Angels, which we're just launching in the UK, and we hope to spread that around the world. And it's a community-led approach to solving period poverty in communities.
Fantastic.
So
thank you.
Yeah,
thank you, Zareen. Thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing your story and sharing all that information. Absolutely amazing, super important information, and hopefully everyone sort of listening will have learned like a lot of like really interesting, amazing sort of things. I mean, not only your story, but everything else that we've been talking about. And so with that in mind, that's actually it for today, everyone. Thanks again for listening to the Grow Business Podcast, and we'll see you again soon. And say goodbye, Zareen.
Thank you. It's been a great privilege. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone. See you later.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business Podcast.